Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Up, everybody. Welcome to Comic Book Club. I am Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are here. Alex is out tonight.
So that means
that the stakes just got high for the two goofs on the podcast. We are here to do it up.
No one's in charge. We can run free.
Yes, we can run free. I guess technically you could say that, or hide in our bunkers for the whole night. Pete, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm hanging in there, man. Thank you. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. I'm having some weird technical problem already.
Technical issue.
Great. I'm doing great. I'm wearing the devil on my t-shirt, which is a clue to our second guest. But why do we get things started with our first guest?
I wish you would.
You wish we would? Well, then I will.
Yeah.
Our first guest, a friend of the show, been on here many times, taking us back to the good old days at the Pit.
Yeah, the live shows we used to do.
Yeah, man.
Technically this is live, but I mean.
This is live. Believe me, I know it's live. Space. I'm on a tightrope right now, Pete. I know this is live. Our guest, he's got a great book out called Sew Buttons right now. The Kickstarter is out there, so please check it out. We'll talk about it more. Please welcome to the stage, Jonathan Bayless.
Welcome.
Live to tape. Great.
Live to tape. Yes, exactly. Welcome out. How are you, Jonathan? We bumped into each other recently, and it was great to see
you. Oh, wow. In real life?
It's in real life, because in our other lives, when we're not doing comic booky things, we are very highly trained filmic television-ish professionals.
Yes, that's exactly right. It was crazy.
Adjacent.
I saw Jonathan's name on a script that I was up for a job, and I was like, could that be the same guy? And lo and behold, we didn't communicate at all through the entire process until we saw each other, or I guess you were on one Zoom when we were casting, and then on set we were like, look at us.
It was funny. The guy who ran the production company, he wrote me, and he's like, hey, I saw your name on a script, and we're hiring this guy that maybe you know. And sure enough, I was like, I know that guy.
Small world.
You were like, don't hire him. Don't hire him.
12 people in the industry.
It is true. But speaking of the industry, especially the film industry, let's talk about Sew Buttons. What would you call Sew Buttons? Is it like a series? How does it work? Because Sew Buttons is a comic you've had in different iterations for quite some time, right?
Sure. So Sew Buttons is a series. It's an autobiographical series in the vein of Harvey Pekar. If anyone knows Harvey Pekar and American Splendor, maybe they saw the movie American Splendor. And I come out with these like clockwork once a year, every year. And this is issue 13 that I'm kind of subtitling it Film School. Like, it's on Kickstarter as Sew Buttons Film School, because there's a lot of film references in there, probably because I wrote a lot of it during the pandemic and I was home just watching movies. But, and the concept is I do the writing and I find all different kinds of artists to interpret the art, and I will tailor these stories kind of based on what they can do. Like what I got on screen right now is Sew Swampy, and it's kind of about how my, grandmother, when I was at summer camp, sent me, she knew I liked comics, sent me a bunch of comic books. They were all Archie comics, except for one Alan Moore Swamp Thing. And it like changed everything. And the guy Tony Wolf who drew it, I've seen him draw Swamp Thing before in some of his work, so I was like, oh, he would be perfect for it. So he did a great job.
That's That's great. So you have like a sniper target on different artists that you choose for your different pieces.
I do. Like, you know, the next one that you're showing right here, right? So this one is drawn by a guy named Joe Zabel. So Joe Zabel is one of these, I'm going to say, he's like an old school Harvey Pekar artist. Like, you know, he drew for Pekar 20 years ago. And I met him at a small press convention called Small Press Expo that's held in Bethesda, Maryland each year. And, you know, I gave him my work. I was like, oh, I do the same kind of thing that Harvey does. Maybe you'd be interested in working with me. And he was like, yeah, sure. So I drew a story about how I was working at Sundance Channel, and every year we would work at the film festivals, and they were showing that American Splendor film one year, and I met Harvey Pekar there, and I was like, I kind of want to do this thing. And the guy's like, you can do this thing. So in a way, it's like a little bit of an origin story.
You got a blessing. That's nice.
The blessing of Harvey. Nice. I love you. You sat behind him at the premiere of the movie, and you sort of combine your origin with talking a little bit about Spider-Man here. I feel like it comes together in such a nice piece.
Well, because the guy, so when I was working at Sundance, one of my, you know, like I was a PA, but there was a producer, you know, like a promo producer, a guy named Tom Powers. And Tom Powers was a guy that was really connected in the comics world. He was an editor at the Comics Journal, Fantagraphics. He roomed with this guy, Joe Sacco, who is probably pretty relevant right now because he did a graphic novel called Palestine. And he's done autobiocomics. And so he knew Harvey Pekar. So when this thing happened at the Sundance Film Festival, Tom Powers, who then became like a director or curator of documentary films and documentary film festivals, he was just like, he connected those two worlds. So he brought Harvey to the premiere at Sundance. And because I knew Tom, Tom was like, he's like, oh yeah, come along, you know, and sit behind us or whatever. And so I got to meet Harvey. I sat behind them, watched the movie. And I still think that's one of the better movies ever made. It's like used all kinds of animation technique, documentary technique, narrative technique. Paul Giamatti was like star making performance. It was great.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah. They did such a great job on that movie for sure. Oh. But what I wanted to say to get back to So Buttons here is first off, love the title. I love how pulpy this is, the great kind of like old school feel to it. I love your kind of thought process and how we're kind of brought into your world. It's just, I love all the nerdy heart in this that kind of jumps out at me.
There's a lot of nerdiness. I mean, you know, I learned how to read through comics. Like my mom gave me, you know, Spider-Man to read in the Bronx, you know, when I was 3 years old. So, you know, it's been all comics all my whole life. Yeah, Justin.
I was gonna say, I like how you cross all sort of the nerd channels in the 13th issue here, from film to TV to comics.
To comics, yeah. It's as nerd fest as it gets in this one.
Nice. Now, as the sort of taking forward the torch of Harvey Pekar, I guess we could say, like, how does that feel now? I feel like the Harvey's time, we've definitely moved past that in comics, you know, not to say creatively, but just like that era, it feels like it's changed. Like, what is it like on your end as someone who's really out there doing it?
So, you know, I just got a handful of reviews on the book, and probably more than ever. I mean, specifically because I use three or four of Harvey's artists in this issue. You know, there are people who go like, oh, he like whatever, he's the new Harvey, or he's doing what Harvey did. You know, there's a lot of like Harvey. And
you're like, Harvey told me I was. So that makes total sense.
I have zero problem with it. I have zero problem with it. I mean, I think most small press creators are self-sustaining because there's no money, right? So it's sort of like you do it all because only you could do it all. And I think because I have a day job, I've always been able to, you know, find artists, hire artists, pay them money, and that's like a special thing on that side of things.
Yeah.
And from what I hear, like these days, it's sort of like my rates might be, you know, some bigger company rates. Which is a little sad state of the bigger companies.
But good for you to pay people what they deserve. That's awesome.
That's like a, you know, it's always been the case. It's just always been the case. All artists should be paid. And, you know, like my wife is is an artist and a performer. She's a comedian. And it's like, same thing. It's like, pay the artist, somehow everyone wants to screw the artist, but like, that's who needs to be paid. Talent should be paid. It's worth something.
Yeah. It's almost worth striking for every now and again.
Depending on
your industry.
Sure. Yeah, no, for sure. I think the fact that there are a lot of strikes are going on. I mean, the thing about comics, like right now, there's a whole thing where a younger generation, they are really seeing what happened to all these older guys in Marvel. You know, did not support them. They don't have 401ks. They retire. You know, losing a limb, while Lichtenstein is stealing your work. They want a living wage, but the flip side of that is that the living wage is hard when the sales of books are, it's like, they're like, these rates are the same as they were 20 years ago. And I go, the sales are lower than they were 20 years ago also. Yeah. So it's a tough thing. You're almost better doing the Kickstarter model, seriously. Yeah. It's like, you're gonna get most of that money and more. That like the money that I'm getting from this Kickstarter will certainly be more than most of the small press publishers. Like it would be more money than Fantagraphics would give me, more money than Top Shelf would give me, than Jonah Quarterly would give me, for a floppy book,
Right. So then see, that's so I wouldn't have guessed that, but that's so interesting to hear. And let's talk about the Kickstarter, because you have 8 days to go. You are
8 days to go.
You are well over your goal.
Woo-hoo! It's true. I thank you. I put the goal for like printing the books. I was like, let me just at least print the books. So now I'm trying to raise more money and give little bonuses. Like at first it was just gonna be like a regular floppy, and then I was like, oh, I'm going to put spot gloss on it. So now everyone got an upgrade. So now the next goal will be I had a guy who's an original Garbage Pail Kids artist that I met when I was at the Topps Company. He did a cover of one of my books, and I turned it into a trading card, but I couldn't get a sticker made that had they would do printing on the back too, like the cards. Yeah. But I finally got a place, and so great. So I'm making those stickers, but I'm also going to do a process zine where I'm showing like the script and some thumbnails and whatever.
Oh, cool.
And any money, further raised basically will then cover artist costs, So, hopefully by the end of it, like just the entire thing will be funded, not nuts to bolts. And, and then I start anew for next year.
Awesome. That's great. I love it because you getting the artist paid and showing the process, I think, is sort of that torch passing down to the next generation in a really nice way. Like showing people how to do it and paying people what they're worth is like the biggest thing you can do to, keep everyone below or everyone on their way up going. But I do want to talk about your process a little bit. The way like you're doing one autobio comic a year, basically in this series. So how do you like put together the stories, or like, are you like, that's going in, I just had a crazy trip to the grocery store? How does it work?
Sometimes, right? Because it's a mixture. Like there are stories that take 10 years to write, and there are stories that take, an hour to write. It's sort of like musicians, right? It's like every once in a while, it's like, something at Kent State happens, Neil Young goes off into the woods and, writes a song. I'm no Neil Young, but I did marry a Canadian. But
and that's as close as you can get.
Good for you.
So I usually will overwrite is what happens, right? So like each issue is like a slightly different length. So I thought I wasn't going to get a 20-page issue this year, and in the end it was 32. It depends like what goes out and also what comes in. So I had, over 20 pages, basically, written, planned, people on them, people absolutely committed to doing it. And as they came in, with this particular issue, what I like about what happened with this issue is that there is, because there's the film touch points and the comic touch points, there is a through line from beginning to end. It's not like a bunch of staccato moments, at least to me. I think a lot of these stories do speak to each other in a way. Like, it's sort of like, you know, the fact that I will have this Sundance Film Festival story with Harvey Pekar, then I do a Sundance Film Festival story about 28 days later, you know, directed by Danny Boyle. And there are zombies in there. And then I talk about, you know, being an exhausted dad like a zombie and have another artist with Taylor draw that. So, I mean, there's a certain flow to it. And sometimes I'll see two stories and I go, in the middle, I either need like another one pager or two pager, or sometimes just an illustration. Like, I have a few people who are not sequential artists, but they are like amazing illustrators. And I go, you know, go ahead. And, you know, so I did this story that was sort of a parallel between, it talks about how, you know, sound effects, words and images is to comics like film score music is to film. And it's about Ennio Morricone.
I love that one.
It's great, right? And in the movie Once Upon a Time in the West, there's this guy that, and he's only in the opening of the film, a guy named Jack Elam. And you've seen him in a lot of movies, you know, a lot of Westerns, but also like The Cannonball Run, you know, and he's got like a crazy eye. And so I asked my artist, I said, hey, why don't you, you know, draw me this character? Because in the past he drew Linda Blair from The Exorcist. He drew Lon Chaney from London After Midnight. And so like, give me kind of a horror take on Jack Elam. And he actually just created a film that doesn't exist. Like, some people are going to look at this image and they're going to go, oh, I haven't seen that movie. I want to see that
movie.
Yeah,
I want that. Yeah.
But we just made it up. You know, like, we wrote a tagline in Italian, and, you know, like, it's like
making it's totally a poster that legit makes it seem real.
Definitely.
Yeah, this guy's name is Miguel Echemendia, and I think he's from Chicago. Great, great artist.
Cool. Really great. I mean, this book feels like, especially film school, feels like something you could be like, oh, you want to see my resume? Read this comic, and you're going to want to hire me for any job in any aspect of entertainment.
It's funny, that's how I got into film school. I got into film school because I, you know, instead of writing an essay, I wrote a script. It's like, you know, like one of those essays, who are the three people you would have dinner with or whatever? Mm-hmm. And I wrote a script that was like a Johnny Carson script. It's like, you know, oh, he's interviewing. I mean, awesome. Like the most trite thing ever. It's like, oh, he's interviewing Jesus and Charles Manson and Lincoln, you know, like whatever, like ridiculous nonsense.
That's
but
great.
Like, but that I got in.
It'll get you. Yeah. Get you go where you need in. To go. Yeah, now, have you decided on your theme for your next issue, next year's issue, or are you still?
Yeah. So I met this guy. Have you guys heard of Kitchen Sink Press? Like, it's he was like an underground comics, right, from 70s, 80s. So I met Dennis Kitchen, who the name comes from. You know, nice guy from Wisconsin. Now he's in Massachusetts. And he, you know, I gave him a bunch of So Buttons books. And so he went to his archive and he sent me a bunch of undergrounds. And So Buttons is, you know, it's not the edgiest of comics. It's like, it's enjoyable. It's relatable. There's heart, there's laughs, whatever. But like, I haven't really pushed a lot of boundaries. And he inspired me to become OCD and buy 150 underground comics. And then I decided I'm going to put them in chronological order so I can read the underground in order. And then, you know, and then I'm going to do an underground inspired So Buttons book. So, you know, so it'll be a little edgier, but it'll still be So Buttons. Like, I was talking to this guy today who reviewed my book, a guy named Rob Clow. He's like, yeah, you should do that. You should push. And I go, yeah. I go, there's going to be penis, but it's going to be cute penis.
Cute penis. That's the only
googly eyes on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like Spider-Man's penis from Rain.
So I'm doing that, and I'm working on a 100-page graphic novel. I'm finally doing a longer form. I've got a cabinet in my house that just has post-it notes on it. Like I did this thing. You ever see on Instagram that David Lynch video where he goes, here's how you do a screenplay. You get a bunch of index cards and you write a scene on the index cards. And when you get 70 index cards, you got a movie, you know? And I said, you know what? I said, that is something I could wrap my head around. I said, why don't I do half, right? The movie's 2 hours. I want your, like, you know, 200 pages of a Lynch script. I go, I want 100 pages. Let me do a rows of, like, you know, like 6x6, 36 post-it notes. And when I fill those post-it notes, I'll have a 100-page graphic novel. And I'm like five post-it notes away.
Wow. Ooh. And is this autobiography as well, or is it something totally
different? Is like it's so I found out recently I did like Ancestry and 23andMe and found out that I'm a quarter Japanese.
Ooh, a quarter? Wow.
A quarter. And so I was like, well, that's crazy. He's like, I did one of them. And I was like, that's crazy. Let me do a second one. And it came up with the same result. And so I was like, oh, maybe. So I was like, let me go to my mom. Because it was like her father is like a little bit of a mystery. Like, did he die? Did he leave? What happened? Who was he? I don't know. So I got her DNA. And she also did it twice. And she is 50% Japanese. And it's like one of these things where you go, you know, she's Russian. Like, I thought she was Russian, like all Russian. And we're like, oh, she's one of those Russians that's like on the border of like Mongolia or China or something like that. Right. And turns out, no, she's 50% Japanese. And not only that, turns out 100% adopted. So she did not know it. And so
huge revelation there.
Huge revelation. And there's a lot of story there. Because I grew up in a town in Westchester called Harrison. And in Harrison, they had a Japanese school, because it was like one of these things in the 80s where Japanese businessmen came to Harrison because IBM was there, and they learned techniques for 5 years or whatever, and brought those lessons back to Japan to build IBM in Japan. So we had, you know, a ton of origami books in the library. I became an origami kid, a lot of manga, you know, and so I grew up with all of these Japanese, with all this Japanese culture. And I did not know that I was actually Japanese myself.
Wow.
So yeah, it's interesting.
I love that you do autobiographical comics, and you found the most intensely autobiographical story to do your. It's like your DNA was saving it for when you needed it the most.
Yeah.
But before we get there, so we'll look forward to that sometime in the future. Yeah, in five post-it notes, I guess.
Yes, in five post-it notes.
Five post-it notes away.
But for Soban's Film School, check out the Kickstarter is what we want people to do, right?
Yeah. So if you go to, you know, you could see the name down there. It's So Buttons. Yep. If you look up So Buttons or So Buttons Film School, you'll come to this Kickstarter. I'm selling, you know, the book itself, the floppy. It's like 10 bucks. But, you know, I'm selling full packages. Also, I'm selling... a few of the artists want to do sketches. So the guy who did the story, Once Upon a Time in the Old West story, is Rick Parker, who was like one of the great Marvel medalists. Yeah. But then he did Beavis and Butthead. So he does a lot of great gags. He's doing sketches. A guy named TJ Kirsch, who's been in every single book of mine, he's doing sketches. A guy named Phil Elliott, who's like a legend in the UK underground, like he came up with Eddie Campbell and that scene in the 70s and 80s in England. He's doing a few sketches, so it's there's a lot there to get if you want to expand beyond just the one issue. And I'm doing it digital, I'm doing it print, whatever you want.
Hey, whatever you're into.
Whatever you're into.
Fantastic. Jonathan, great to have you. The book's great.
Thank you so much.
Great to see you. We'll do a live show again and get us back on stage together to have some fun.
I would love it. Yeah. I'd like to do some stand-up.
All right.
Yeah. Tell Afiro he said what up. I always love seeing her as well.
She is, get this, she's opening for for Anthony Jeselnik at Carnegie Hall on Friday.
Oh, wow. Shouts to that.
That's amazing. That is amazing. So anyway, all right, cool.
Carnegie Hall is some sort of everyone's dream. So that's great.
Gotta practice.
You gotta practice. enjoy that. Backstage maybe for you. Perfect spot to watch.
Maybe. We'll see.
good luck with the book. It's so fun. Thanks. We'll see you soon, Jonathan. Have a good
one. All right. Take it easy.
Jonathan Bayless, check out Snow Buttons Film School, the Kickstarter, support it, and you'll get yourself a copy of that when it comes out, or any of the Snow Buttons books.
Support that guy.
There are 12 of them. He puts a whole year of work into it. I haven't worked that hard on one thing, not even my children. So that's
you hate to hear that.
You hate to hear it. You love to hear it. But let's move on to our next guest. Very excited for this next guest. He's the writer of a book called Let Me Out from Oni that is out on the stands now, which we really enjoyed reading. Please welcome out to the Rectangles, Emmett Nahil, everybody. Woo-hoo!
Hey, hey. Welcome.
Hi, folks.
Hey, what's going on?
Hi. Pleased to be here. Glad to be on the show.
Yeah. Before we get into the book, I just want to say we have our chef. Like all podcasts, we have our official CBC chef.
That's right,
Stray Bullet, who makes Brett Macris. He's a chef down in New Orleans. But he saw your book, and he wanted to do a cocktail for it. So have this cocktail. It's hard to read because it's so tiny, but it's Let Me In Your Mouth. A tequila and Aperol cocktail. I'll send this to you, Emmett, so you can
amazing.
But it's a great drink. It's what I'm drinking right now. It's got a nice smoked paprika hit on top of it. Ooh. It's very good. So take that home for when you have your next Let Me Out after party.
I will. That's fantastic. I love a good spicy cocktail. It's amazing.
It is. It's got that heat. But speaking of that heat, let's talk about the book, Let Me Out. I love this. It was such a tense read. And then it opens up, and then we won't talk about, we won't spoil anything.
Yeah,
and then it turns into an absolute melee by the end. So it's fantastic. Tell us about the book and how you came about it.
Yeah. Number one, thank you so much. Appreciate it a lot. That means a lot. George Williams is the artist and illustrator on the project in general. I just do the writing part. But basically,
that's a lot of it, though.
Yeah, you know, it's enough. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it.
Yeah. So we first basically got connected over the website formerly known as Twitter.com. had been following each other. I had been coming up with the idea just generally for a satanic panic, queer take on the satanic panic, basically.
Yeah.
And I ended up sort of reaching out to George. We ended up hooking up and getting connected on what we wanted the book to be, which was awesome. And that collaboration sort of took off from there, really. We ended up working together, pulling up some sample pages, and it was a really easy collaboration with him. It was just a really, it was the easiest collaboration with an artist that I've had in a long time. We have a very similar, I guess, ethos and sense of tastes, I guess, artistically. And so we ended up running the Kickstarter, what funded successfully for the Kickstarter itself. And then Oni Press reached out to publish the print version of the book.
Reached out to you. That's so nice.
Yeah, it was great. We chatted with them a little bit before the Kickstarter. My agent was involved in the whole process in general. And initially they'd said, maybe, maybe not. But afterwards they were like, yes, absolutely. We know that there's an audience for this book and we'd love to be the ones to bring it to print, which was pretty dope to hear.
Yeah, that's so definitely.
Cool. Yeah.
I just wanted to say, I really love this. I love the character designs, the art style, the way it kind of pulls you into the story, but also just the pace, the action, all that it encompasses. It really puts you on just such an amazing journey. And sometimes when you go into comics, you're like, is all this time going to be worth the payoff? And you really stick the landing. I'm so impressed overall with the package and the kind of the experience that you're giving the reader. Talk to us a little bit about your process, how you kind of work that all out. And did you start from the end first or how did it all go down?
Yeah. So this is my first full-length graphic novel. It's not my first comic project. I also work in, you know, private, like, I work as a game developer as well, my day job, basically. And I'm a narrative designer for games in there as well. Wow. So I do a lot of writing generally. this wasn't like my first venture.
Interesting to hear about the game development, because it does, like, I feel like you move into a boss level phase at the end of it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
in a great, like, progressive way. So
yeah, I'm glad that's kind of the sensation, because I really wanted it to be a very, like, pacey experience and have that sort of slow build, and then towards the end have like something.
Oh, it definitely does. Yeah.
The
so great.
So I'm glad to hear that worked. But I usually, when I'm working on projects for myself or with like only one collaborator, I tend to think of the ending scenes or the ending like motif before I really work out anything else. And I work backwards from there, not literally in terms of writing, but like, you know,
writing backwards fits with the story a little bit.
But yeah, I came up with sort of the final image that was in my head, and obviously George made it like 10 times as amazing as it could have been otherwise, but that came first. And then I really built up, okay, I want to do this type of comic. What kind of characters would be in this situation? You know, how do we get from 0 to 100 basically in reverse? Yeah. So
cool.
You definitely do that. And like, from a pacing perspective, you do ratchet up the tension. It's rare, I guess, in a book that is about sort of dark forces, I guess I should say, that like that part is sort of boiling the whole time, but the real tension is just in the day-to-day lives of our main characters here. And I love that. Now, what, I don't know, like, did you, setting it in this small town, pitting everybody in their corners, where was your inspiration for that?
I think that a lot of it was sort of coming off of the idea of, these are real historical events that maybe not like the most like fantastical satanic parts didn't
happen. Right.
But the idea of like the satanic panic was really something that went on in America, obviously, before my time, I will say that. But, you know, it was something that was legitimately tearing these sort of small communities apart based on these, you know, relatively minor differences in like interest, personality, identity, like, then so I really pulled from a lot of that when looking at those conflicts personally.
It's great, and it's scary the way that, I mean, it plays, especially in this, like a real witch hunt and conspiracy and again, I don't want to say too much because the reveals and surprises are so good, so well paced out in the book, but that's hard to do. About the art, the art also surprised me. It feels like sort of what you'd expect from a like fun slice of life story. And then you get this like very, you know, high tension story across all the characters. Was that a deliberate choice, or was that something that, that George brought in?
George's style, I think that he is remarkably consistent across his style. That's just how he tends to render. And in looking at that and in looking at his general style, he's also a huge fan of horror, but he has worked in, you know, kids' work as well. He's worked in middle grade and young adult as well. And so even though we were thinking of this book as a sort of early adult book, I wanted to have that feeling of slipperiness too. And I thought George's work just organically works really well in that space, because as much as he does have that sort of like somewhat more friendly aesthetic and like a little bit grittier style, he also loves to draw gore. Like he loves that shit. Like, we both are huge like horror enthusiasts and like have a lot of similar cinematic inspirations for some of those panels. And so he's just like, oh, great, I don't have to tone this down at all. And I just sort of was like, yeah, go do your thing. Make it as wild as you want it to be and as psychedelic as you want it to be.
Nice.
It definitely gets there. Now, without saying anything, the end is a massive cliffhanger that I was like, surely there's more pages after this. Are there going to be more pages? Are you working on the next one? Not to jump all the way to the future, but
so I won't say anything just yet about about another book. It's been in our heads, really. We initially, for this first project, it was framed around the idea of here's the time that we want to make the book in, because we didn't know we'd be working with a publisher, really. So we were pacing ourselves out of like, okay, here's how much I think I can raise money-wise to pay you as an artist appropriately and to pay you for your time. So with that in mind, I do feel it was left on a cliffhanger, and I've heard comments. We are taking in that idea of maybe potentially continuing in the future. Yeah.
Great. That gives me enough of a hope/spark that there will be more, because you really fall in love with these characters over the course of it and want them to wreck shit, if I can say that very literally, across this small town.
Absolutely love it, though. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So is there anything else you're working on that you can tell us about? Since this is on the stands now, so everyone can go get this where all comic books and books are sold.
Yeah, although I will say I believe it's on back order already, so maybe contact your local comic shop.
Back order, and, the dream.
Yeah, make sure that you can get it. I know for sure it's on the Evil Empire, Amazon for sure. You'd have to just check in with your local comic shop and the indie bookshops and make sure that you can get it. But yeah, so I personally, on my end, I have a nautical horror novel coming out this summer. Not a comic, unfortunately, but a novel. It's my first full-length book. George and I are working on other stuff together as well. It's something sort of UFO-themed as well that we're thinking of. Sort of a road trip. X-Files meets the video game Control, if you're familiar with that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there's some other interesting, like, conspiracy theory, fun wackiness afoot between us two as a collaboration, just because it was so fun working with him for Let Me Out. Yeah.
And let me say, successful, it feels like. I do have a question about, you said a nautical horror?
Yes. Yeah.
What is drawing you to the sea, I guess? Or what what's the nautical horror that you love out there?
Yeah. So I am from Eastern Mass and have lived there pretty much my whole life. So I've always been like, I've never lived further than like 10 minutes away from the ocean. That being said, I love movies like Lighthouse and other sort of like, maybe not directly Lovecraft, but maybe Lovecraft loosely inspired type works.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a piece of shit, and I think we can do better than that.
That's a great take. I love that take. I love Lovecraft. Not him. He sucks, but some of the vibe is good.
Yeah, and so it's a nautical whaling horror about a sort of doomed whaling ship. The sailors on board pull up a man out of the stomach of a whale, and horrifying shit ensues. So that will be coming from Tenebris Press in early summer, late spring this year.
That sounds awesome. I mean, being on a whale ship is pretty horrible just in real life back then. So I can imagine what hell you're going to bring for these poor heart of the sea motherfuckers.
Yeah.
You're out there. Emmett, thank you for being here. The book is fantastic. Everybody go check it out. We'll see you soon. Come back. I know it's not a comic, but I'd like to hear you talk more about that nautical.
Of course. Anytime. Thanks for so much for having me, guys.
Thanks for being here.
Pleasure.
See you soon.
Bye.
Emma Nahil, everybody, with Let Me Out from Oni Press.
Oh, man. It's a banger, dude.
It's a banger. Yes.
Yeah.
And very excited to, of the edit. Whoops. There you are back. Whoopsie. Very excited that we may have a future of sequel coming down the line. Pete, it's you and I. We're back. We're here. Hit us up. That means it's time for our favorite section, because you make it up. It's time for your audience questions. questions. So if you have a question, hit us up there in the comments. It could be a question about anything. Stanley says, talk dirt about Alex.
Yeah.
How could we talk dirt about our guy, Alex? What would we even say on record? Because he will see this, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but we should, you know, Stanley asked us to talk dirt about him, so we should. So, you know, I'll kick it off. I'll start. I'll just be like, oh, man.
Do you have a prepared
the guy who does so much for our show, he drives me crazy, that guy. Oh, wow. He works so hard to make sure we can put out podcasts and have fun and pursue our dreams.
You
oh,
love
that
him, but
fucking
you're,
asshole.
You love him, but you're shaking your fist at him.
That's right.
That's beautiful. What a great friendship to be. Before we go further, though, I got to say, what you drinking, Pete? This is a classic section.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not drinking anything I'm proud of. I'm drinking a Michelob Ultra.
Oh, sorry. Are you in a club at 3 a.m.? Is everything all right over there? Are you on a bachelor party in Vegas right now? Is
no. My brother was at some like charity event, and he won an auction, which was like a drink. He won like a whole bunch of drinks, so we got a bunch of Michelob Ultra. So, yeah, drinking it for free.
Well, that's the only way to enjoy Michelob Ultra. I'm drinking the Stray Bullets cocktail. Let me in your mouth. It is fantastic. Very good.
Stray Bullets. That's it again.
Stray Bullies does it again. I use my grapefruit tequila that I make in-house, and it's adding a whole nother...
From scratch?
Yeah. It's just infuse it really quickly. Stray Bullet, while we're talking about him, has our second question. Just a quick question here. Where the fuck is Alex?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if...
reading of the Marvels right now.
Yeah, I'd repeat blowing up. I wasn't going to be that obvious about it. But yes, he is seeing the next Marvel Cinematic Universe production, the Marvels. So we will hear his take sometime in the future. Can't wait. Looking forward to Alex seeing that movie. He's in the middle of it right now.
Oh, man. He's probably eating popcorn.
Yeah. Oh, man. He's probably more nervous that he's not here. Because when you think about it, I will miss shows sometimes. Pete will miss shows sometimes. Alex, steadfast.
Not so much.
Never misses. When in fact him not being here, he was like, "You guys okay?" I was like, Yeah. And I got on here earlier today. I was like trying to figure out the buttons. So, you know, it's good. We're all grown up now.
Yeah,
a lot of these
it.
Questions are what happened to Alex?
Yeah, where is Alex dad?
But here is a good one. Alex eaten by a whale, says Kevin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Highly possible. Highly possible. Also from Kevin, what is your best story about the person in the other rectangle? However you want to define best story. That means, Pete, your best story about me, and for me, my best story about you.
Wow. Best story about Justin.
That's tough because we've experienced a lot of things together.
Yep.
We also know a lot of stories about each other from life. I'll go first and just return us once again, since we have a nautical theme, to our time on the Comic-Con on a cruise ship, where Pete and I shared a bed, not just a bedroom. We shared a bed because that's what they put us up in. Alex got his own room with his family.
With his family. He got to bring his family. You have a family. You know
I have a family. And
you're married with children.
That family is Pete LePage, because at sea, at sea, it's you and me, is what I always say.
Oh, man.
So we got on the ship, and they, when you get on, they're like, do you want to do all-inclusive alcohol? And Pete and I are like, no, that's crazy. We're not going to drink that much. It was like $200.
No, it was $300. And I was like, oh, my God, that's so expensive. You know what I mean? Because thinking about when I go out in bars in New York City, but what I wasn't thinking about is I know bartenders and there's friends and there's buybacks, but that's not a thing.
And you're not drinking all day on a ship.
Yeah.
We ended up hitting the same amount of money that we would have paid for the first night.
The first night we blew $300.
We are smart.
Like, we should have taken that, yeah.
But I will say that was an absolute blast. We partied. We met a bunch of strange people. We hung out with Who do we hang out with a ton?
We hung out with a lot. Baker,
was that? Who was our guy who rode along with us for so much? No, Brian Azzarello. Brian Azzarello.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, we rolled with Azzarello for a while, which was fun.
Yeah.
I kind of talk about, it was fun because we also met another person, and it was like the three of us wanted to go get drunk and go dancing, which was something that I don't normally do. And it was a weird kind of fun experience of like being drunk on a boat and then just kind of like howling at the moon and stuff like that, which I was like, I think it was because we were sleep deprived. And also like, you're kind of eating the same food. You know what I mean? You watch like first night, it's like, oh, we got this amazing chicken. And then it's like, okay, now it's chicken parm. We're like, okay. And then now it's chicken soup. And we're like, oh, I see what's happening here. This is getting a little weird, you know?
The shouts to Upstate New York, Beef on Weck. They had a Beef on Weck stand.
Oh, I hit that up.
We ate too much of it. If we were on that ship right now, we would be dead because that was too much consumption across the board.
It is. That's the thing about it is it's too much. And I was like really, I remember so crazy tired, but then I decided just to go and work out instead of sleeping. And I got real cracked out, man.
That sounds straight up insane. You worked out? When were you working out?
Yeah, I brought my drink to the gym. And I was working out. It got weird.
Yo, that's less healthy. That makes it worse. That's worse for you. That's like reverse exercise.
Well,
plus what? Well, you were down there doing like squats? Were you just pumping iron?
Yeah, dude. I was, you know, getting some cardio in, you know, doing some weights. Sick. You know, it's kind of.
I've never woken up hungover and be like, what did I do last night? Oh, I got my personal best on the bench. Sick.
I was at the gym.
Wow, I woke up with these weights in my hand. Great. See, look, we keep surprising each other no matter what we do, where we go and what we do. It's amazing. Get us on that ship. Let's go, Comic-Con cruise.
Yeah.
It only happened the one time and we were there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there. That's next right. question from Pablo. What's the comic you would like to see as an animated series or anime? It's a great question, especially right now. We've got the Invincible series. We're doing our own podcast, Podvincible, about that show, which we're very excited to have back. Pete, what's a comic you'd like to see as an animated series or anime?
Well, I think it would be cool if like HBO or something did a Concrete, because it's like a little moody and a little darker. And I think that would be a fun kind of like animated thing, but also something that's a little brighter and great that I would hope like Netflix or something would jump on is Mouse Guard.
Oh, great call. That would be a great,
I think it's tailor made for either an animated movie or just like an animated TV series, something.
That's really smart. You ever see the animated Lord of the Rings by Ralph Bakshi?
Yeah, yeah.
A Mouse Guard in that style, like a classic 70s, 80s Bakshi, like very sick. Stray Bullet coming in strong.
Corrected
Pete Yosagi.
Yeah, you're right. I should have done a little Yojimbo for sure, yeah.
Maybe they should do with like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles animated thing.
Yeah, you think that would be popular?
That would be fun. That would be fun. Some sort of mutant mayhem, you know what I mean? I'm going to give it up to similarly an older comic as well, Bone, Jeff Smith's Bone.
How has that not been?
Give me an animated series of that. I got to feel, I think that had been in development at different points, but never made it all the way. A couple of follow-ups on Us on the Ship and Your Jedi Married, says Stray Bullet. That is correct. And Stray Beans asks a very important question. Who is the big spoon? And the answer is, of course, we're both big spoons, dog.
That's right.
We are huge. We're two huge spoons.
Yeah.
Picking up soup. Pete and I are both soup spoons. Right? We say that about ourselves.
Yeah. There was no cuddling.
Well, I mean, we would walk home. You want to go to the bathroom first? It was the Jedi marriage was really going strong. Question. What song can you play on the stand-up bass, Justin? That's right. For the astute observer, and this is not exciting for those listening, but I have a giant styrofoam stand-up bass behind me.
Styrofoam, boo. People want a real stand-up bass. You know what I mean?
This is way cooler. It's so big.
That looks like someone who does sketch comedy for a living. Is that for Peanuts? Is that why you have that?
Yes. For many years, we did the Charlie Brown Christmas Live as a charity show.
Yes!
You nailed it.
I know you so well.
Pigpen plays the stand-up bass famously in that, and it was a fun stuff. Fun many years of doing that until the corporate overlords have sort of taken it away from us, and that's sad news. Another question from Stanley. Are you happy you went back and watched Doom Patrol? Any other old shows you regret missing? Great question. Doom Patrol, we have our Doom Patrol podcast. It's coming to a close. We have one episode left.
Get in the Doom Room.
Get in the Doom Room. Very fun podcast. One of our more
happy that we did ones. That. So happy that we were badgered into doing it and it became a reality.
We famously secretly recorded three seasons of that show, or two and a half seasons.
We did
maybe?
It for so long, and I we was like, this so is long. So dumb. We have to release these. And they were like, no, we're going to do another season before we... And I was just like, oh, my God.
We dropped them all at once. And yes, I'm very happy. Like, I really like Doom Patrol. It's a weird show. And sometimes that means it's going to miss. But in general, very fun show. Worth watching. Very excited to see where they end up.
Yeah, very. So we're one app away from the ending. One app away. So cannot
spoiler.
Wait.
Spoiler for the second to last episode, really great episode. I mean, one of the best episodes of the series was the second to last
episode. You're going to laugh. You're going to cry.
But any other old shows you regret missing from a podcast perspective?
Arrow.
Yeah, there has been some talk on our Patreon Slack.
That would have been real nice. That would
going back
real
and doing Arrow,
nice.
And there's no way we could do that. We can't do that. Go back and rewatch Arrow? God, what? I'd have to be in a really bad, like, jail situation to have that be what we were doing. You know what I mean? Like, fully, like Man in the Iron Mask level prison. Like, I'm Leo Dio.
You could have just said regular prison. You didn't have to be a dick about it. You know what I mean?
No, I'm talking so famous prison books are written about it. You know what I mean? Like the Count of Monte Cristo style jail.
Ooh.
Then where they, I can like, oh, all you can watch is Arrow, and then talk about it for 30 to 40 minutes with your friends.
Sounds nice.
Yes, it would be. It would be lovely. But any other besides Arrow, I'm trying to think of. I mean, going back, I've been watching old episodes of MacGyver. When I have. One of these TV,
like the real one, not MacGruber, like the actual MacGyver.
No, the actual MacGyver. I have like a Samsung TV in there. Whenever I turn it on, it's like, would you want to watch some of our fake networks that have like Baywatch on 24 hours a day? And one of them was showing MacGyver, and I watched two episodes. I was like, yo, this show is so weird. It's a banger, though. That show is.
I mean, it went for a long time.
The first episode I watched, I swear, is the inspiration for the MacGruber sketch. It's a Murdoch episode where MacGyver's tied to a missile, and Murdoch was his like arch enemy who's they can never find his corpse. The guy that ran the Phoenix Foundation is his sort of boss who is like goes blind over the course of the series and just shows up at his place randomly. He lived on a houseboat, and his houseboat was blown up. Anyway, it's just great stuff.
Sounds like MacGruber.
It is. That's what I'm telling you. That episode, I think, is the inspiration for MacGruber. And I think that's it for your audience questions.
Hey, all right.
And now it's time to turn it over to a man who refuses to not be on the show. He's here erstwhile, earnest, and consistent. Pete LePage. Let's welcome out the star of trivia for trivia.
Hey, all right. Yeah, this is the part we give back to you. Need to win $25 free in the form of an online gift card to Midtown Comics Because if you have had $25, you should go to a comic book shop. That's what you should do with that money. So why not win $25 and get yourself some online comics? That sounds like a fun thing. Anyone who wants to... Pablo.
We have Pablo in the comments.
We have Pablo here. It's very exciting. All right, cool. So Pablo, you will type in your answers. And here we go. All right, today's trivia is on fun comic book facts because
fun facts.
Because Zeldatron takes all the news for himself. You know
he doesn't take news. And also, you're not breaking news in trivia. Alex is like sort of talking about.
I used to be the cutting edge of the news on the show.
That's not
true. People used to rely on me for the news. And now
anyone who gets their news from Pete LePage is a psychopath.
All right. Today's trivia is fun comic book facts and a small nod to the legend Richard Roundtree, RIP. Please listen to all three options before making your selection, Pablo. Here we go. Question number one. Bergie and company are killing it on DC's The Joker, The Man Who Stopped Laughing. It is so awesome. Highly recommend. Spoilers. But who gets slaughtered in the last issue? Is it A, one of the Jokers? B, not your average Joe. This guy's always on time. Or C, Joe Pronto.
A lot of options there. That comic came out today, so.
Well,
it's a fresh take.
It did. So if you haven't read it today, I don't know what your deal is. It came out today.
That's a great point. Strong choice. Pablo, just type in your answer to the question. Which
yes, Pablo
a
is correct.
Correct.
It
Pablo,
is
really
a.
Nice.
Yeah, here we go. Question number new. Number two, how can Thor speak any language? Is it because of the blank? Which is A, his willingness to learn and Duolingo, B, the All Tongue, or C, Gordon Parks? Legend.
Oh, yeah. I had a case of the All Tongue for a while.
Did you?
Yeah, you know what I mean? When you're like, when you're young, you're out there dating, you have sort of a case of the All Tongue.
Interesting.
Wait, are you saying that Thor may have done like really committed a Duolingo in the pandemic? And now he's
Could just buckle down, you know, you can learn a new language. You know?
Wait, are you saying Thor doesn't speak English?
That's not what I'm saying, no.
Pablo says, is it A?
It is A. Feel free
nice.
To, yeah, you know.
Wait, A was Duolingo, I believe.
A was A was Duolingo. It's B, the All Tongue. Pablo, you're supposed to put B. The All-Tongue.
Yes, that is a rare incorrect. I would say, though, Pete, you got it wrong more than Pablo did. So that's a strike against you.
I feel about that. All right, here we go. Last one, Pablo.
I think the bass is probably a good cure for the All-Tongue. That is correct, Michael Tillman. That is correct.
Okay. Youngblood was the first comic ever published by Image in 1992. But what was the second? Hint, it sold more issues. Was it A, Spawn, B, that dude is weak sauce, who? C, Alan Weeks.
Wow. This would be a great trivia question with actual answers in it, because I don't know. I wouldn't have necessarily known that. It wasn't Brigade
number
one?
Well, come on, dude. First, a comic, on Image,
Yeah. Pablo says, hey, it is Spawn.
It is Spawn. Yes.
Nice,
and
man.
Of course, I am all three of the C answers are in reference to the 1971 OG Shaft.
That's, of course, correct.
Damn.
I was just thinking,
right.
I literally, as you're talking, I'm like, Alex, shut the music off. I'm like, oh, I'm in.
When's this Alex guy gonna show? He's
dude,
really
Alex, get on top of your shit. Yeah, go and see a movie and not invite your best friends. Where's
yeah.
best friends? Wow, what another great trivia! And shouts to Shaft. I believe it was the Shaft sequel. There's a line where a cop calls him and is like, "Hey, we need your help, Shaft. The sheriff's daughter has gone missing," and he goes. I got a hand on it, and he slaps the ass of the sheriff's daughter who's in his bedroom with him. And it's just Shaft.
Okay, well, that's a little much, but all right, all right.
That's what happened in the movie.
I'm sure
you're celebrating this movie.
I am, yes. In its time period, you know what I mean?
Well, I'm just saying. He's just having sex. It's consensual. What are you mad about?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm just saying. I don't want to come across as an insensitive person. You know what I mean?
No, I don't think you've ever, no one has ever accused you of being insensitive.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I don't know if that's true.
you are.
Kevin, correct. Yes, I am talking about Jeff. You better shut your mouth.
I can dig it. Pete, tomorrow is new comic book day. What are you looking forward to picking up tomorrow?
Oh my God, there's a lot of
today. Some comics came out, like the comic that you talked about in the stack.
Well, I'm looking forward to the stack because we don't have Daddy Grumpy Pants making things rough for us, so it'll be a nice conversation. I'm looking forward to Birds of Prey number 3.
Wow.
As well as The Joker, The Man Who Stopped Laughing, number 12. There's also Transformers, which is bananas good, and
I was gonna say Transformers number 2, which is excellent. Daniel Warren Johnson just bringing in a great new take on it, writing and drawing that book. And you know, the whole Transformers and G.I. Joe being in the same universe is a little strange, I think. But I think they're doing a decent job of making it not seem crazy. I also want to shout out House of Slaughter 19, which I really enjoyed, as well as X-Force number 46. That book is wild, but there's some great text pages in this that I really enjoyed, and it is one of the more fun parts of the Fall of X event that we're all enjoying and loving. Folks, that is the show of Comic Book Club.
We did it.
I'm talking about. That means it's time to say, whoops, that's the beginning.
Oh, man. Oh, we blew it. We got to start over now because that's the beginning.
Yeah, we'll start the show over. Shout out to Jonathan Bayless with So Buttons.
Yes, So Buttons.
We really enjoyed reading. Check out the Kickstarter, support it, and you'll get your own copy at home. You can also pick up Let Me Out from Emmett Nahil, great comic. Really enjoyed reading that as well. Huge. It's out now from Oni Press. Definitely check it out. And folks, we are always here making podcasts for you. We've got Scott Pilgrim versus the podcast coming out. That new series is coming soon. Comic Book Club news coming every day, very early in the morning. Alex gets up before dawn. Marvel Vision. You can check us out. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/comicbookclub. We have a lot of lively chats. You can meet Stray Bullet in virtual person.
Yeah.
Talk about his stuff. You can subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. Comic Book Club, Comic Book Live on Twitter or X, Comic Book Live on Instagram, TikTok, and Comic Book Live, comicbookclublive.com. To check out all of our business. Next week, we've got Nandor Schaefer with from The Fabled Offering, Wells Thompson with Depths, and Jason Michael Primrose with The Arrival. Ooh. Another great show coming at you. Guys, thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for everybody who was chatting in the chat while we were doing the show. Appreciate you, Michael Tillman, Kevin, Stray Bullies, Pablo.
Good night, everybody.